Last week on God Hates Comics.
Yeah, we did. I just didn't want to do anything.
We're hating each other. What's up?
That and Stan Lee not signing baseball.
We made a huge mistake. And now I'm paying for it because I owe you money. For a poster you didn't bring me.
In my head, I'm like, no fucking way. Those cost $50.
And it's not just me. It's like the collective internet. It's like, man, what the motherfuck? Fuck. I would, like, the entire show, I'm just like, I just get this thing off me.
I'd lose my shit.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to God Hates Comics, the only podcast in existence that is about all the comics that God hates, which is all of them.
In theory.
In theory. This is our 38th issue, and yeah, it's pretty exciting.
It's a milestone,
and,
right?
Yeah, I think so.
Sure.
38.
Variant cover, 1 in 38.
1 in 38. The 1 in 38 variant cover issue. But we're back. And I'm pretty excited about the stuff we got coming in the future. We were talking about it before the show today, so we're not going to get too heavy
into it. Coming up, folks.
We got some cool stuff coming. Some cool guests coming. I'm going to be setting some stuff up in the future. But,
it's the present.
It's the present. So, in the present, what are we talking about? Okay, what have I been up to since we last recorded? Actually, we were talking about Kamen Rider before the show. I actually got caught up on Kamen Rider Drive, the current Kamen Rider series. And it's taken a turn, to borrow a pun, since it's car themed. It's really ramped it up, and it's gotten pretty compelling. Like, the latest... I'm up there. They're up to episode 30. I just watched 34, which is the... They usually go to about 48 to 50. So we're kind of getting to the home stretch, and it got pretty interesting, and it's kind of become pretty endearing. So, and I've gotten to watch a few Kamen Rider Gaim specials to help me through my shakes since that one's not on anymore. And
you know, it's funny that you say that. I mean, I guess the specials aren't new. They're like old stuff.
Not terribly old, no. The Gaim proved so popular that they are making more stuff.
Okay.
Basically, what happens when you're a Kamen Rider or even a Super Sentai is that you are in your show. You have the entire run of your show. You typically show up in something before your show starts to kind of hype it up. And then during the course of your show, you film a movie where you cross over with the previous show. So we'll take Gaim, for example. Gaim had its run of episodes. Gaim showed up in the last episode of Wizard to kind of tease his Wizard was the show before him.
So it's Kamen Rider Wizard?
Yes. It's so not as cool as it sounds.
Normally use like American names?
Not always. Like Gaim is nothing, and like there's Kuga and Akito, and so no, not always.
Kamen Rider.
Wizard is one of those words that I don't think...
Dusty looks at me and says, yeah, like it's common fucking knowledge.
Common knowledge.
I mean, we're sitting here talking about Kamen Rider Gaim, and you're like, so they always use English words?
Well, I mean, like Kamen Rider Wizard.
Wizard, I think, is a word. Wizard is just a word that doesn't have a direct translation over there.
Okay.
Like, there's no Japanese word that specifically means wizard in that sense. And so that's what the Japanese do. They borrow words. There's actually a whole segment of the...
It's what they do.
Well, no, there's a whole segment of the Japanese... God damn it, I'm explaining, you fuckhead.
Look, I'm having fun. This is fun.
There's a whole section of the Japanese language that's intended for words that didn't originate in Japanese, but they need to adapt. Things like hamburger, wizard, things like that. So there's kind of three different parts. There's the main Japanese alphabet, then there's the words that are kind of imports that they still find ways to spell in Japanese. And then there's the kanji, which is stuff they've adapted from Chinese. So learning Japanese is not easy, which is why I haven't done it.
So is this like English?
No. Wizard is just Wizard.
Wizard is just Wizard.
And he is a magician. So Gaim shows up in Wizard, and he has his show. And so then during his show, he has his own movie. And then he has his team up with Wizard. And then he has his solo movie, and then finishes. Then he shows up in a team-up movie with Drive, which is the next series. So there was a movie that was always coming after the show ended where he teamed up with Drive. But Gaim has proven so popular that they're actually making new one-off, like, direct-to-DVD specials that are kind of focusing on kind of ancillary characters. But... every couple of years they get a Kamen Rider series that's like that. It's so popular they keep the train rolling for a little bit. And the Gaim ones actually continuing on. There will be another direct-to-DVD release, I think, in November. So I'm hoping the trend keeps going, because there's a lot of characters on that show. There's like 11 Kamen Riders on that show, so there's a lot of characters that didn't get a lot of development. So this is kind of giving them a chance to go back and flesh out a lot of those guys. Outside that, I started catching up on the current Sentai, but I'm not near finished with that. Ninjas this year, but it's pretty cool.
Ninjas.
And it's only the third time they've done ninja themed Sentai in 40 years. It's kind of impressive.
Really?
Yeah. They've done samurais a few times, but that, and then I read a bunch of comics too. What concepts? I actually read Archie 666, the last issue of Archie.
Yeah.
And it was cute. It was pretty much just a nice little. Everybody loves Archie. Everybody just kind of has their moment where they're like, oh man, remember how great Archie is? And just kind of wraps the whole thing up. And it's cute. Nothing.
Archie the person or Archie the comic?
Archie the person. Like, nice. They're all talking about Archie himself and all the good stuff he's
done.
Not
even the comic where Archie died, is it?
No.
That's Life with Archie.
That's Life with Archie. That's okay. A different one altogether. It was like I said, it was cute. Nothing dramatic.
Nothing.
They make a couple of nods to other series. Like, they make one that's like, if we were ever in a zombie apocalypse, Archie's the guy I'd want having my back.
Yeah.
Or if we ever ran into a killer alien, Archie's the kind of guy I'd want in charge. Which we'll talk about later. but like I said, it was cute. But other than that, and then all the other books I read mostly were things that came out this week. What a concept.
Yeah, I know.
We actually read books for this week. Well, most of us did.
One of us did.
Well,
two of us do. That's six, and at that point, man, like, it's over half. There's only three of us.
66% of this podcast read comics.
And so, and then we also read Batman. So we'll talk about Batman in a little bit. But
hell yeah.
We'll talk. What have you guys been up to?
I picked up the big thick tray they put out for Secret Six from Gil Simone.
The first one, Volume One.
Walker, yes.
All right, cool.
So I've been reading that. I'm about two-thirds the way done with that.
That's some good stuff, man. I have that trade, too.
You know what I love about it? Mm-hmm. The fucking convoluted story where it's all, like, so steeped in other shit that's going on in other fucking comics that you have no idea the fuck is going on if you haven't read all this other shit. But it doesn't matter, because I fucking love it.
I love the part where it doesn't make sense.
It makes sense, but it's like other shit was going on, and it plays directly into these other series.
Are you talking about... Because I read that series when it was coming out. I don't really...
He's talking about Villains United.
Yes.
The Infinite Crisis
time. I never actually read Villains United or the first Secret Six mini.
You're missing out, man.
That's what I'm reading. Yeah, okay. And it's fucking fantastic.
Gotcha.
No, it's really good. And I bought that book, too. And I'm probably going to go back and read it now that...
So is this before the second series?
What do you mean?
Like, is this...
It's Villains United.
Yeah.
Then it's 1 to 6.
Okay.
Then it's the ongoing series.
And that's in one volume.
Yeah.
No, not all of it.
No. Okay. All right.
Yeah, not the volume 2 is coming, and then 3 is coming.
Okay.
I think it's 3 volumes, maybe 4.
Yeah.
I don't remember, but they're putting out, like, it's two trade paperbacks, I think.
Yeah.
And they're like, 20
two
bucks.
2 to 3, because, I mean, it's thick. I'll give it that. I mean, it's...
And it's... Maybe it's super cheap, too. They're like $20, right?
I think so.
Yeah, which is, you know, fucking ridiculous. Yeah, they're $20. And the first one is... Yeah, the first one is the first two trades. So it's about 13 issues of content.
All right, cool.
So it's a hell of... And like I said, for $20, like...
Yeah, you can't beat that.
That's, and with Amazon, they're discounting it down to like 15.
Yeah.
So, like, that's almost cheaper than a Comixology sale.
Yep.
That's what you just gotta wait for. You just gotta wait till it's been out for 10 years. Then they put out a trade collection.
It's
been out for
10 years. Oh well, yeah.
It has. It's getting close.
Comic has been out for 10 years. Yes.
Yeah, but the trade has
comics. All
well, and the thing is, a lot of those have fallen out of print, so now they're doing big fancy new ones.
Yeah.
So
it's
pretty cool.
About it, man.
And those are great books. I remember reading those when they came out, and like I read all Secret Six.
See, I didn't read it when it came out. I read most of, I guess, the Secret Six run that you. From the actual run, not the mini and Villains United. So this is all like new to me. And
okay,
it's fucking fantastic. You know,
gotcha. Because that's when you were talking about like there's stuff that's tied to everything else. And
yeah.
I was like, I don't know.
And that was
or,
Villains United.
I don't know,
and then they did
Secret
the
Six.
Like they did Villains United, and it was so popular they did Secret Six, and then the mini, and then it was so popular they did the ongoing, which lasted like 40 issues.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it only ended No. It got through Blackest Night. So it went. It may have only ended at Flashpoint.
There's a Blackest Night tie-in. It tied in with Action Comics for a little bit. It tied in. There was a Doom Patrol.
I think it was Blackest Night that got me reading it. Yeah. And then I went back and searched.
Because they did, when they brought back the deceased titles, they brought back Suicide Squad.
Yeah.
And so Secret Six and Suicide Squad were a crossover. Danse Macabre. So yeah, those are great comics. Really good. And the art too, because like it's Eaglesham on the first two, I think. And then it's
Brad Walker.
Not, it's Brad Walker that starts it, and then Eaglesham takes over.
Yeah.
It's Eaglesham first, I believe, and then Walker later.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it's Eaglesham and Walker who are great. Right. Like Eagle said, Eaglesham's on the book now.
Yeah.
He came back to it. Like it's that kind of thing for him. He wanted to come back and do more of it. So it's great stuff.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I'm probably going to pick mine. Volume 2 should be coming out soon.
Hopefully.
I think it does. So, Dusty, what else have you been up to?
Not too much. Oh, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm Power Watch. I'm up to episode 9.
Okay.
Yeah.
Something fun. So, how'd you feel about that show?
It's cool.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think I'm up to episode 10. I think I just watched episode 9.
Okay.
But yeah, I like it, especially after this last episode. Whenever they actually introduce the mists.
Okay.
And that's cool.
Well, it is cool.
It's, honestly, I don't remember specifically what happened, because I've seen the entire season, so I don't remember specifically what happens in that, in like, the beginning episodes. But, yeah, it's really cool. It's definitely a step up from season one.
Yes.
Not quite as badass as, like, the very end of season one, but it's like consistent throughout. It's like consistently good, and it gets better towards the end. So
cool,
it's pretty awesome. I think you're in for a
It's kind of like time. The lull between movies, you know, and then the movie happens and shit gets shaken up.
Yeah, you know? Except this season feels much less of a lull.
So did they kill somebody in Avengers 2 that was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.? That's what I hear.
No. I think what happens is that they reference, like, there's a big death that happens after Age of Ultron.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a, maybe not a result, but like things move and go into motion as the result of Age of Ultron.
Okay.
So it's kind of like, you know, it has its impact.
Gotcha.
But it's not as you know, they don't show like Sam Jackson dying like they did at the end of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or season one.
Okay.
The tie-in with Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so let me see, what have I been up to? Game of Thrones ended, like, season 5. Holy shit.
Yeah.
Are you reading the books, or are you only watching the show?
I'm just watching the show.
I've heard it's completely off book now.
From what I understand, it ends in a very similar spot to the end of the last book, but things leading to this point have diverged from the books.
Yes.
I don't read the books. I know people that do. And they keep talking about characters I have no idea, you know, who the fuck they are.
I know some people who read the books, they're not too happy that the show's diverging.
I don't see a problem with that. Like, there's
For me, it's that kind of thing. It's kind of like with Walking Dead. I'm like, do you really just want to see the exact same
story? Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
Right?
Why would you want to do that? Why would you want to take something that you already know and just say, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to...
Part of me says yes.
Hmm?
Part of me says yes. I would like to see that exact same story. You know? I'm not... saying that, you know, all of them wants to lay it. I don't mind taking liberties, and I like Walking Dead, and so on and so forth. But, like, I love the DC animated movies that just straight up animate one of the fucking comics. You know, like a good storyline, and they do a good, faithful job.
But even then, they change a lot of those.
Yeah,
like Justice League Doomed was Tower of Babel that became something else. And Superman versus the Elite was what's so funny about True Justice the American Way, but it changed. Like, they're broad strokes, but they change. They're kind of like X-Men Days of Future Past. Like, it's a lot of broad strokes, but they change all the nuance.
Yeah.
And so it's a thing where I think that using the comics as, like, a starting point, like Days of Future Past is a great example, is a good idea, but I don't think there's... I wouldn't think there's a whole lot of freedom in just straight up adapting a story that already exists.
Yeah.
Like... It's something like that.
Well, right? I think it...
unless you're apparently a 50 Shades of Grey fan, in which case you will read the exact same fucking book again because she changed the perspective.
Why the fuck not? I mean, I'm
that's what I gotta do. I just need to write a book that I can rewrite from 9 different perspectives and just release those bank, and then retire.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be the, that's like the American dream, I think. Just take someone else's
idea. We'll do it with comics.
That's what?
We'll do it with comics.
We're not going to make as much money for comics.
Well, alright.
Like the Killing Joke from Joker's perspective.
Ooh.
Money in the bank.
Yep.
Yep.
And we reveal that he actually does die at the end.
We just have to get the rights for Joker and Batman.
Shouldn't be too hard.
Yeah, I mean, I
think... Should be pretty...
They're making some calls.
Yeah.
You work at a comic store. You can
just I got Dan DiDio sending me fucking Candy Crush requests.
I still love that he sent you Candy Crush. That's so ridiculous.
I love it. He's just like one of the one people I can actually count on to help me unlock the next level.
That's awesome. That is awesome. That's almost cool. Makes me want to play Candy Crush just so that I can play with Dan DiDio.
Have you guys seen Jurassic World?
Well, yes, but
I have not seen Jurassic
about
World.
My Dan slot War with Friends fiasco?
No.
Oh.
No.
Oh, okay. So I was and it's funny because it was like 2:30 in the morning for me and I'm just bored playing War with Friends. And I'm playing Dan slot and we've got like two games going on. Okay, and I'm kicking his ass.
Why are you playing that slot?
Because I see him on Word for Friends. Yeah, I'm Facebook friends with him. Okay. So I just sent him an invite, and he accepted it. And so like I was like, cool. So for like 2 months straight, I would like casually play with Word for Friends with Dan Slott. And so one night I'm playing, and I'm winning both games. Okay, but like he plays a word, and I'm already on my phone playing somebody else. So it pops up. And I instantly play back, and I get a good word. And then he plays the other game, so I instantly play back on that one, too. And then it keeps going back and forth, and back and forth. Like, he keeps playing, so I keep playing. But I keep, like, really kicking his ass. And, like, on both games, I'm up, like, 100-something points, and it's just nonstop.
He's
so,
a comic
like,
book,
yeah, so, and yeah, but it's like, all right. So I kick his ass on both games, end up winning, like, 400 and 400-something, you know. But after it's all said and done, and, like, we go back and forth for a few minutes until both games are done, and then after it's over, he sends me a message, says, fucking seriously, man? And I said, what? And he's never played with me again.
He probably thinks you cheated.
He probably does. He probably thinks I cheated because it was, like, so quick. But it was like, what do you want me to say, man? Like, I'm sitting in bed, you're playing, I'm playing.
Yeah, we're
playing a fucking game, you know? Yeah. Like, what's going on? Don't be a sore loser, Dan Slott.
And this is why the internet hates Dan Slott. It's not Spider-Man. It's his
Dan
words
Slott.
With friends. It's his lack of sportsmanship when it comes to words with friends.
Just, like, fucking seriously, man? I'm just like, what? What did I do? Like,
so anyway.
But Dan, why?
Dan, don't be like
Dan,
that.
No, Dan. And I played Louis Simonson for a few months, too. So that was awesome.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So, that's cool. All
right, so Jurassic World.
Yes. Which was fucking amazing.
I thought it was really good.
Slow at the beginning, and I was like, man, like, part of this is fucking boring for a while there, you know? And then the end picks up, and it gets better.
There's only one, I don't want to spoil it, but there's like one scene towards the end where I really feel like they dropped the ball with just having like the classic JP theme music should have kicked in.
Yeah.
You probably, it's like right when.
Oh, I know.
Okay, it's right at the end. Okay.
Yeah. And
what are you doing?
The one that
is fucking spoiler. It's like,
oh yeah,
he's sitting. Andrew's sitting here with his thumbs in his ears, humming.
I won't spoil shit.
Yeah, it was really good. Okay, so do you think it deserves to have taken the throne from Avengers in terms of ticket sales, box office?
I knew it was going to. I mean,
yeah.
It's fucking Jurassic Park.
It's Jurassic, exactly.
Bullshit. You knew it was going to.
Well, okay, I don't say I knew. It doesn't surprise me.
Okay.
Because it's Jurassic
Park. It surprised me. Fuck. Like, fucking, it's after Jurassic Park 2 and 3?
Yeah.
I have no idea why audiences would go out to see
Chris
Jurassic World.
Pratt.
I'm sorry. Pratt. Guardians didn't make that much fucking money.
No, you're right. But because of Guardians,
dude,
now
Chris Pratt's hot shit.
He's now the most bankable fucking actor
in the world. He is. I understand that. But still, it's fucking...
It's Guardians that, like, launched it up there.
Dude,
I mean, it was, like,
got
popular,
got
and then they did Guardians,
mixture.
And then they did this, and it's just like, okay, yeah,
you
can be Indiana Jones
a
now.
Perfect mixture of whatever I want. You've got Chris Pratt. You've got dinosaurs. You've got connections to a beloved franchise that's more direct
really
sequel
all
to Jurassic Park.
Really, all you ever needed to show us was Chris Pratt riding motorcycle with Velociraptors. Everybody right there was just like, done.
Like,
I don't care about the rest of the movie. I just want to see that on the big screen. You know?
So, yeah.
I haven't seen it yet. I'll get around to it.
You should watch it.
Yes.
I've also been... Oh, God. I don't know what the fuck.
Oh, yeah. And I went to the fucking Jurassic Park Mondo Gallery. and a lot of posters.
Sweet.
In Austin. So that was
awesome. Jesus.
That was cool.
Okay, so when Jackie was in town, I started watching the Star Wars movies with her because she hadn't seen them, and I wanted to track the machete order. Mm-hmm. So we watched A New Hope. Wait, do you guys know what the machete order is?
Yeah, yeah. Me and Vanessa actually... No, you may not, but Vanessa and I actually...
yeah, absolutely. No.
We watched it when we did Valentine's Day this past year. We watched all six Star Wars movies over the course of a weekend.
Oh, God, all six.
All six in a weekend. Oh. So, for those of you who don't know, the machete order is a way of watching the...
Is it the actual chronological order?
No.
It's is it the one order? Where you watch, like, one... And then
you watch. The idea is that if you watch it 1 to 6, the revelation that Vader is his father is completely ruined. But if you watch it, if you can watch the special editions 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, at the end of 6, you see that you don't know who that Force ghost at the end of episode 6 is. Like, who the fuck is that guy?
Yeah.
And so it was kind of a way to. So the guy was like, he wanted to find a way to preserve the twist that Vader was his father and then still somehow explain who this guy is before he randomly shows up at the end of episode 6.
Yeah.
So the idea is that you watch 4 and 5, get to the revelation that Vader is his father, jump back. He even says you could skip 1, which you can technically do.
You start with 2 and 3, and then you watch 6. And basically it serves as a, like... It's his backstory.
Because yeah, basically you find out that Vader's his father, so then you find out how Vader's his father.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so that's it. So
that makes sense.
We started watching A New Hope, then we watched Empire, and then we ran out of time and we didn't get to finish it.
You can include episode 1 if you want, but the honest truth is the only thing you need to take away from episode 1 is that Qui-Gon dies and that they decide to train Anakin. Like, there's nothing
and
else
in all honesty, movie. everything
that's
that
all recap.
Yeah. So, but anyway, so I decided, hey, you know what, I haven't seen the prequel movies in forever, so I was going to finish it off on my own. So, this past weekend, I watched Attack of the Clones and, Revenge of the Sith?
Uh-huh.
Holy crap.
Those are not good.
Steaming piles of fucking shit. My God.
I was really just reminded that We rewatched all of them, and as I'm watching those movies, the only things that I'm finding interesting are Sidious's behind the scenes rise to power.
Yeah,
those are the most interesting things about those movies, because I didn't realize it watching it as a kid. You didn't catch all the nuance that was happening because there is nuance. But,
no, there's not much. But
the big thing is that I didn't realize it watching it the first time, but Sidious is playing both sides against each other the entire time. Basically, like in episode 1, he's playing the Naboo side by being the politician, telling her that she needs to do this for the sake of this. Like, you know, he's like, you have to stand up to the Trade Federation and do this. But he's the one that's telling the Trade Federation to do all of it. So that's actually fairly interesting to me that in that regard. Like, if you ignore all the Anakin bullshit and just focus on him, there's actually some interesting stuff happening there. Basically, his whole rise to power was interesting. The Anakin stuff was... I guess the issue is that with Sidious, it was a bit more of a mystery. Like, you didn't know how he pulled it off. But with Anakin, like... From episode 1, once they introduced What's-Her-Face, you knew flat out where that was going. You knew he had to get with her, they had to have kids, and then he had to go bad, and she had to die.
The thing is, it happens so fucking fast.
Like, let that...
Revenge of the Sith.
Yeah, it's like all,
it's,
like, fucking
it's
3
like he,
minutes in there.
He switches, he flips on a light switch, and he's just like, okay, I'm bad now. You know, it doesn't make any goddamn sense. It's like, I can kind of see the justification where it's like, okay... You know your wife's gonna die, and the only way to save her and to save your kids is to do this bad thing. But he's just like instantly, fuck it, alright, I'm bad, I'm evil. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
It doesn't
also,
at all.
I mean, another thing, I'm not really much of a fucking graphics whore when it comes to like video games, but holy crap. Like, it's amazing how bad Attack of the Clones looks, even in comparison to like Empire or like the movies that fucking came out like 30, almost 40 years ago. You know, it's like everything looks like you're watching a fucking, like, a shitty video game.
Yeah.
Like, it just looks really bad, and it doesn't hold up. Even, like, the graphics in Revenge of the Sith, they're a lot better, but they're still not, like, that great. So, like, I'm really happy that J.J. Abrams, with the new movie, is using a lot of practical effects. Like, you know...
I actually noticed that when I rewatched the special editions of 4, like, 4 specifically. All that unnecessary shit he adds on Tatooine, like... He just, like, it's a scene where they're, like, walking across the fucking thing into the bar. He's throwing, like, 18 creatures in the fucking background. No,
I don't have a huge problem with that, because...
For me, it was just how obvious it was.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it stood out like a sore thumb.
It's obvious, but it's not as bad as, say, like, making Han shoot.
Oh,
what the fuck? Come on.
Like,
it's
a huge part of the character. God damn. Harrison Ford don't fucking care. Let it go.
It's something that doesn't matter, but it's an unnecessary change.
It doesn't matter, but it doesn't matter.
Here's the thing. Like, ultimately, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't change who his character is, right? But it's like his reasoning was, okay, I don't want to show kids that Han Solo is a cold-blooded killer. Except in Revenge of the Sith, he shows Anakin straight up murdering, what, younglings is what they call kids?
Yeah.
I mean, they don't show it, but like he busts out his lightsaber and the kids get scared, and
happens? Anakin's not the hero of the movie. That's the difference there.
I suppose.
Han Solo becomes one of the... primary heroes of the franchise.
He doesn't start off the hero.
Those are not comparable situations. You're basically saying Han shooting that guy in cold blood because he was about to kill him. Him changing that is akin to Anakin straight up murdering a bunch of children.
I think
those are not comparable.
It's close.
It's not even in the fucking ballpark.
Look, dude.
It's in a different stadium.
Look, dude. If you're standing there, if me and you, like, right now, the way we're sitting across from each other, right, for the people at home.
Right.
Right, and I'm holding a gun to you.
Uh-huh.
And I'm saying, I'm bringing you in, dead or alive, because you're worth a lot of money. Are you just going to sit there and wait for me to blast you away, or are you going to fucking put a bullet in?
My point of it is, how the fuck would a professional bounty hunter... It's obviously been doing this for a long time. How would he miss?
I don't think Greedo's been doing shit for a long time, man.
But no,
who knows him?
You're talking about Anakin's. You're talking about Anakin's descent into darkness over Han getting a mild sense of morality.
To verify, I completely disagree with Vince.
Verify,
think that Han should have shot first.
About what?
It is not akin to him slaughtering a bunch of kids. No. Not same thing at all.
I didn't say it was akin to it. I'm just saying that you can't take out one thing because it's...
No. The reason he changed it was not the fact that he was showing him being killed. It was what it did to the Han character.
That.
No, you said the reason he changed is because he didn't want people to see Han as a cold-blooded killer.
Yeah.
That's you're using C in a literal sense, but that's not what he means. He means he doesn't want people seeing Han as somebody that just straight up blasts somebody. If he's going to become a hero of the franchise later. Anakin is the fucking villain at that point.
But he doesn't just straight up blast somebody. He fucking protects himself because the dude's holding a fucking gun to him. So he shoots him.
In the original cut of the movie, Gree doesn't shoot.
That's my fucking point. Is the reason Han shoots first is because he... And it's not like a blatant, oh my god, I'm a bloodthirsty killer type shit. He's defending himself. He's got a fucking gun being held at him. He knows that if he goes with the guy, he's gonna fucking die.
My point is that those two situations are not comparable.
How is it that we always end up on the same side of things, yet we still argue about shit? I'm talking
because I'm not on that
because
side.
He is partly on my side in as much as that he thinks it's not an apt comparison, but he's on your side in that it's an unnecessary change.
Yes. Exactly.
It's unnecessary.
I've also been playing with Legos because I fucking love Legos. All right,
let's get on
with this shit.
All right, guys.
We have shit to talk about.
We have Batman. We're going to talk about Batman. Dusty hasn't finished reading it, so we're going to tiptoe around it as much as we can. But last week was Batman.
Batman
41. Which is very notable in that it debuts the quote unquote new Batman, which
Robo
had been
Bat-Bunny.
All new, all different Batman,
an actual all new, all different Batman.
Take a fucking note, Marvel.
Not just Tony Stark in a new suit. And so it had been spoiled who it was for all you kids at home. It's Jim Gordon.
Yeah.
Basically, Powers Inc., the company that will eventually buy Wayne Corp and Batman Beyond, builds a...
I mean, I'm just going to interject this here, but I do believe his name should be Bunny Man, not Batman.
Really. And he even makes that joke in the book that Gordon's just like, it looks like a bunny. And so...
But I like the... I mean, the suit's blue, but they actually make reference to the fact that they can change color, and they even have, like...
The Zur-En-Arr.
The Zur-En-Arr
color scheme. And then he's actually got, like... He's got, like, a... He's got, like, a Batman suit when he steps out of the thing, too. It's not like he's just Iron Man in there. Yeah. You didn't see that part. Sorry. But there's a part where he actually steps out of the bat suit, and he's still got kind of a Batman Beyond...
Yeah, it's actually
like he's kind of got the yellow.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's kind of looks like he's out of the grid.
It takes Powers Inc. to or Powers Incorporated to Batman Beyond.
Yeah, and so a little bit of a teaser there for it. And then the big hook at the end, naturally, is that do you care?
No.
Some guy at the end walks past apparently a homeless guy on the bench that he goes, Bruce Wayne?
And yeah, the just book question mark. That's where it ends.
Like, now, I heard people saying that they debuted two Batmans in this book. Who's the other one?
I think people are just stupid and thought that yellow and black Batman was...
Was it a different Batman? Maybe? Because they show...
They show him walking back to the suit. Like,
well, that's where the stupidity comes in.
Yeah, yeah. Stupid people thought he was...
I heard people saying that they're two new Batman costumes. Or maybe they realized that, you know... Bruce Wayne's still alive, and that's what they meant.
Or it could be, I mean, the cop. There's a cop in the middle of the book where he's
training to be Batman. There's people training to be Batman.
He walks on the roof, and he's still wearing, like the bat gear.
Yeah.
So I'm curious if that's actually Bruce, or maybe this is the Return of Lincoln March.
Oh. Mm. I wasn't even thinking about that.
It occurred to me. It occurred to me because of Secret Six. I'll explain that later. Yeah, it was pretty good. You said you had a gripe about it last week.
Okay, one gripe, and I kind of wish they actually acted on it, because to separate Gordon Batman from Bruce Batman, it's that Gordon has a lot of internal dialogue. And it's actually kind of funny and quippy. It's almost Spider-Man-esque.
Yeah.
I kind of wish he was verbalizing this. What?
I said that Spider would take over Spider-Man after SWAT.
That would be cool. That would be cool, but that's not my gripe
with SWAT. SWAT feels about Spider-Man the same way gun nuts feel about their guns. You will take Spider-Man when you pry it out of his cold, dead hands.
I
genuinely believe that is what it will take to take Spider-Man from Dan Slott.
Anyway, back to what I was saying.
Yeah.
Just to separate Jim Gordon's Batman from, like, this new Batman from the old Batman, I kind of wish he was actually saying these things. I think the internal dialogue...
Well, I think the thing, too, is that this Batman is very much a corporate thing. So they're trying to maintain this kind of like, cool, big...
Kind of like by the people, for the people.
Well, it's a corporate entity. Like, it's Batman Incorporated, in a way. And so in that regard, they're trying to keep together this facade of Batman as kind of the dark, silent protector.
Speaking of Batman Incorporated, is that as a concept finished?
Yeah,
I don't think I've actually...
Yeah, Morrison finished that.
No, I know, but it was kind of left off as, like, there will always be a Batman Incorporated, but, like, in no other Batman books are touched on it, right?
Yeah,
okay.
Well, I'm trying to think if anybody, like, I think the Japanese Batman's shown up a few times, but...
See, I'm not reading any of the other...
Batman Incorporated really was Grant's story,
so
it kind of ended with him, I think. Batman 41, I dug quite a bit. I think it's a genuine, all-new, all-different way to look at it. And
it's a lot of fun.
I think that if people don't like it, they kind of need to get over themselves.
Just fucking wait it out, folks. He's coming back.
Exactly. Like, that's the end of it. Like, if they just read to the fucking last fucking page,
Ninja Turtle fucking dying. No. Shut up. There's four of them. There will always be four of them. They're not going to fucking kill one. Just don't.
What if Donatello doesn't come back and Venus de Milo shows up?
This current creative team might be able to make it to work.
Frozen over.
So what?
I actually kind of would have a mild faith in the creative team to make it work.
Which book are we talking about?
TMNT.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely, I have no doubt.
Yeah.
But anyway, I quite dug Batman, so I'll be sticking around and. Hopefully they stick
along. Honestly, I didn't really think I was going to, like, oh, this is going to be the book where I'm going to stop reading Batman, because...
It was fun.
Yeah, it's the same creative team. It's just
same creative team. And like I said, they had fun with it. Like you realize, like it's all that internal dialogue makes it a different Batman, and
it does.
The villain they had him fight was a big, bold, cool thing, and it was fun. And like I said, cool if you want your classic Batman, fucking Detective Comics and fucking all that shit's still out there.
Well, hell, JLA.
JLA's fucking Justice League.
Batman, yeah.
And, let's see how many's in. Although I heard Robin, Son of Batman, was really fucking
good. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah,
I know people were doubtful of Gleason's ability, but apparently issue one fucking rules.
Well, that's the thing. I'm always a little concerned when it's someone that's classically known as an artist.
I agree. I can understand that to an extent. Yeah. Like, that's why I was, skeptical. I'll talk about this more later, but that's why I was skeptical of JLA by Hitch. Because Hitch's last series that he wrote...
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the last thing you wrote?
It was called Real Heroes. It was basically Galaxy Quest with superheroes. Okay. Basically, like, a bunch of superhero actors were kind of tasked with actually being superheroes. And it was shockingly mediocre.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if he's finished it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Knowing Hitch, probably not.
Hell, they say he's been working on Justice League for, like, 2 years or
something.
Which,
they said that's one of the reasons why it doesn't really fit into any continuity.
And I'm fine with that. Like, the honest to God truth is that I'm like, you know what? The greatest stories that I remember, I can't go, oh, God, it doesn't tie into anything I can't read.
Oh, I know.
Gives a shit. That whole what matters bullshit, get the fuck out of here.
I kind of wish they would do away with... I mean, I don't want to say do away completely with, like, continuity, but just kind of like, okay, Detective Comics, just fucking be Detective Comics. You don't have to, like, tie in anything else. Just be a comic about Batman as a detective.
I'm down with that.
Batman is about Batman. Action Comics is, I don't know, Superman, Man of Action, whatever. You know what it is.
It's a thing where it's not fucking hard, but people, whatever. So let's talk about a little bit of, not too many big news items this week, but we're going to discuss a few things. The first one is something that may not be a shock to too many people, but Secret Wars 4 to 6 have been quite delayed. I think 6 now is hitting end of September.
Which isn't that when it was supposed to end?
Like, I think so.
The miniseries?
Maxi-series? Eight issues, I think that's still mini. I think Maxi is 12. So, 4 to 6 have been delayed, knocking back most, if not all, of the tie-in books. And even other titles not affected by Secret Wars have also been delayed, including All New Hawkeye. That might be the art, because that art's pretty redundant.
Well, I tossed that in. I just think that maybe...
But Silk has also been delayed, Darth Vader, and even the yet-to-be-released Lando series.
Yeah, so a book that hasn't come out yet is already being delayed.
I'm actually getting a signed copy of issue 1 by Soul and Malik. Very carefully. Does this speak to a bigger problem at Marvel? I don't know if it's, I'd say, a bigger problem, but it's definitely a recurring problem.
Well, I just think that, I mean, personally, I don't see why they're so hell-bent on putting out as many fucking books as possible. And I don't mean, like, diversifying in terms of issue titles, or titles, but just like why do we need 3 issues of Secret Wars in 5 weeks?
Well, it's been this current trend where, like, they burn through these events in fucking 4 months now. Like, it's this current trend of, you know, like
kinda,
I said,
kind of, it's like kind of 4 months, because what happens is that it's front loaded. You get 1, 2, 3 in, like I said, a 5 week span, and then issue 4 comes out a month later. It's like, that's a momentum killer. I mean...
Yeah.
Like,
And Marvel, with building, especially even more so, because they're talking about the all-new Marvel Now shit hitting in September, now Secret Wars isn't even going to be done by then.
Yeah. Unless they push back the entire line. Which
I can't see them doing.
Especially since they've been advertised. They've already advertised.
It's kind of like Siege all over again. Where the Captain America Reborn, showing how he comes back to life, didn't finish before Siege needed to start, so... They had to put out the epilogue to the book before the book was over.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, you know...
So that's it. That's the problem. They're advertising books way in advance.
It kind of ties into that conversation last week where the guy was like, help me sell the book now. But now Marvel's not even going to be able to sell the book they've got coming out 3 months from now, because Secret Wars isn't going to be done.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened during Civil War, though.
I feel like it happens during every event. Like,
I didn't think it happened with the last couple. Like, I think Original Sin, even though it was shit, and Axis, even though it was shit.
Well, Axis, maybe they had different artists.
Infinity And Axis both had varying artist teams, yeah. So they were able to cycle through. And Original Sin was drawn by Mike Diodato, who can draw like 90 pages a week. So both of those, all three of those were fine. I don't remember what was before Infinity. Fear itself, I remember, ran mostly on time because it was imminent. Siege was Quapel. It still was delayed. But,
was 4 months.
Yeah,
probably
exactly.
Less than 4 months
after. It was supposed to be all, that was the whole point. It was like, wham, bam, done. And then, like, it sucked that it was delayed. Yeah. So, it runs into Marvel. It happens at Marvel a lot. This whole kind of stance of, well, shit, we're not going to be able to do it. DC doesn't run into Forever Evil, had a couple of issues, but not as many.
Look, here's the thing.
And, like, other event, like Blackest Night, I know, had a skip month built in.
Yeah.
Where they had a book that they, that was how they played it. They just did, you know.
I think DC is doing things in terms of putting out comics a lot better than Marvel is. Because what they're basically doing is they have a structure. And it's almost—it's not foolproof because books do get delayed.
Sure.
But almost every week, like the first week of of any month, you can go in. Okay, Batman and action and for example, I don't know, but it's like
for the
Batman
first 3 or 4
and
years,
Wonder Woman and Robin are coming out on the first week, and then the second week it's gonna be Detective and Superman and Green Lantern, and then the third week it's so they stagger it. So basically, as a fan that doesn't, you know, maybe they don't know. Okay, I need a diamond. I need to have an app for this. Blah blah blah. They
you can rely.
Say, yeah, you can go to your comic book shop once a month and get the books you want.
Yeah,
you know.
It was actually that was one of the compliments the New 52 got when it started is that every book came out when it was supposed to.
Yeah.
For better or worse, in some cases, whether it meant the art had to be rushed or whatever, but like, yep. You know, second week, and then like, that's what DC's weekly series have always been hailed for, is that even if, the quality may vary, they were there every week.
Yeah.
Every week they were there. They got it done. And it's been, I know Marvel just did Wolverines, but it fucking blew.
Yeah.
But that was Marvel's first real foray into a weekly series. Man, it sucked. Yeah. God, it was bad. And so you end up with kind of... When this happens, I think, like you're saying, the only thing you're doing is hurting yourself because you're crushing the momentum. You're basically... All the hype the series is getting, well, now it's wearing down. And I mean, that's... that's why they want to do them so fast. That momentum... starts,
yeah.
And then boom, it's there the whole way, but then you run into problems and the momentum just gets crushed.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of, like I said, it's hardly the first time it's happened, and I doubt it's going to be the last time. So
I just
yeah.
think I really wish, like, with the all new, all different Marvel that they're fucking claiming to have, I just wish that they just slow things down a bit, man. Like, I don't need fucking 16, 17, 20 issues of Wolverine in a year.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a point where Amazing Spider-Man was coming out.
Three times a month?
Yeah. Was that tri-weekly?
That's tri-monthly.
Yeah. Tri-monthly? No, that's three times. Anyway, it doesn't matter. You
three times
saying.
A month. Yeah.
You know, like, why are you doing that? Like, just fucking come out. Okay, look, January.
Well, I know why they did
number
the
one.
Spider-Man. Because at the time, there was Amazing Spider-Man.
There was three Spider-Man books, and
yeah.
they canceled them all.
Exactly. Yeah. So they just canceled all the Spider-Man books and then said, you want three Spider-Man books?
I mean, that's
books?
How I ended up with, like, fucking two... Yeah. That's how I ended up with fucking 230 issues of Spider-Man.
Yeah,
same here.
Like, I started reading with the issue where Aunt May gets shot, which was 537.
Mm-hmm.
And then before I knew it, I was up to fucking 700. And I was like,
I actually... That's kind of exactly the opposite of what happened to me. Is I was reading Spider-Man before Aunt May got shot, and then that happened. And, then One Moment in Time happened. And he sold his soul, and I bought the first trade, I guess, because I was like, all right, I'm going to wait on this. And I bought it. I'm like, well, I mean, as soon as he sold his soul, I was like, all right, I'm done. So then I waited, and I bought the first trade after it all came out. And I was like, don't fucking care. So then I just stopped reading for a long time.
Yeah, well, I mean, you weren't missing much, because those first couple of trades or issues of Brand New Day sucked dick.
Yeah.
Big old fucking floppy donkey dicks, what they were sucking. Holy shit.
So yeah, anyway, moving on from Marvel, we could go on for this for a while. And some happier news, DC in September, is this?
Yeah.
They're going to be putting out 25 Green Lantern variant covers to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the Green Lantern character. Naturally, it debuted in 1940 with the original Green Lantern, Alan Scott, who actually was based in Gotham City. And still has a weakness to wood. It's weird.
That is weird.
That was, there's an arc of JSA by Johns where, I forget the guy's name, but he's like, he's evil. And he's literally a tree, and he just like stabs Alan right through the chest because Alan can't do shit to stop him. And wasn't actually Groot. I forget the guy's name. It might have been whoever Jason Woodrow became. I don't remember his name. He's Poison Ivy-esque. Whatever. But yeah. Anyway, so DC's going to be putting this out there. I mean, this is fairly in line. They've done stuff like this for other stuff. I mean, it's pretty common of DC to do like a variant line. They did Darwin Cook month, and then they did Joker. They're in Joker month right now. Yeah. They did the Flash month, and they're also going to be putting out Green Lantern: A Celebration of 75 Years in October, which is going to be a hardcover celebrating the character's legacy. This is akin to the ones they've done for Batman, Superman, Justice League, Shazam. Not Justice League, just Society. They got one for Shazam coming. They've done these pretty regularly. And so it's kind of cool. I mean, it's pretty. And so you're saying, is it just a cash grab? I don't really think it's a cash grab. I think it's just. I mean, yeah, you're going to get your fans that are like, oh, I got to have them all. But, like, I don't think that mentality reigns as much as it used to.
Yeah. Considering that there are still people that line up at 10 o'clock when the stores open or whatever to get variant covers, I think the mentality is still there.
Who are these people? Where are they?
They're at the fucking store at 10 o'clock.
They're not at our store. But
well, you guys get variant covers?
Yes.
But, like, I guarantee you the majority of fans aren't doing that.
Well, not the majority of fans, but there are
absolutely
people.
Absolutely not the majority.
I didn't say there weren't any people. I just don't think there's that many. Yeah. Like, fucking, it's Green Lantern variant covers, and they're not, and I doubt they're going to be...
It's just like, if you see one that really catches your eye,
yeah, cool. That's what I do. Like, I've been buying...
A cover of Action Comics that had the fucking Superman and Doomsday on the fucking telephone pole.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's just badass, yeah.
Actually, there was one cover, I think it's a Flash variant, that's got, Silver Surfer and Galactus on the cover. Like in the very bottom.
Yeah, the very bottom corner. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's just a fun little thing. I mean, yeah, you're gonna get your guys that are out there, but like if they're not making these harder to get covers, I really don't think it's a cash grab kind.
I mean, I've never really like every now and then like okay if I
I'll pick up like this month. I think I got a couple of the Joker variants. I think I got the Joker variant for Batman Action. Yeah. And a couple of others.
The Action Comics one is fucking fantastic.
That's the Darwin Cook one with Superman and Joker. So.
Yeah, the Suicide Squad one, I believe. The Suicide Squad is actually a Jim Lee one. Yeah, it looks pretty badass.
Oh, God damn it. Too bad Suicide Squad sucks. where's John Ostrander, people? Get him back. So yeah, that's a little thing.
Suicide Squad?
Sean Ryan, I think his name is. No fucking clue. All I know is it's not been great. So, another thing that's been going on, DC has been, they just started this month, but they're back to the split page ads. And what this is basically, we talked about this before.
Yeah.
It's where the top half of the page is comic, the bottom half is
advertisement. Specifically for
this
clicks.
Has been met with varying levels of reaction, with certain creators harshly criticizing it, notably Greg Capullo, others making jokes about it. And so Dan DiDio, poor man, came out today, and he's kind of, I'm not going to say what he said verbatim, but he basically said that the fact that companies want ads is a testament to the strength of books, and they're in the kind of the business of making money, and so, and kind of drove home what I think is a very interesting point of if when you're reading a comic and your biggest concern is ads, then well, the comic must not be good. So their strategy is more to make books that are good.
Yeah.
And that is pretty much how I feel in a nutshell. I mean, for me, like, I was reading Batman, and it had the split page ads, and I didn't give a shit.
Yeah.
I think it was well done.
I mean,
For me, I'm just reading through the story. Like, for me, like I said, we've all kind of been reading comics for 15, 20 years.
Ads are just part of it.
Like, I mean, we don't even really realize it.
Should have read comics for 27 years.
Shut up. But it's a thing where like it's almost second nature. I'm like, all right, there's an ad, just flip past it. Like, it doesn't pull me out of the book or anything. I just keep going.
I still have to say, I really wish, because I was flipping through an old issue of Fantastic Four.
Uh-huh.
I think it came out in 72. I checked the trademark stuff in the front of the book, copyright stuff in front of the book.
Okay.
And what I loved about it was that flipping through it, there were lots of ads, or tons of ads. I think there are even more ads in that book than there are in modern books.
Yeah.
But they were drawn and made to look like they fit in a comic book. Comic art and kind of kitschy stuff. And I kind of wish they would target, like, I don't have a problem with seeing, like, I think I mentioned this before, Star Wars board shorts. But yeah, fucking make a comic out of it. You know,
they used to have Superman, like, that I've had some Superman comics that were just Superman comics. And, yeah. It's an interesting way to do it, but I probably imagine it costs a bit more than taking a picture
probably
of Nick Lachey.
Probably costs a bit more. But
since Nick Lachey, nobody gives a
Marvel
shit.
Marvel still does that shit, man. Look on the fucking back of, like, a few months ago, look on the back of your comic. They have Harley Davidson.
Oh, no, they do that on the back. Yeah. Harley Davidson does that. So it's not something that's completely gone away.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like, it's actually kind of cool. There was an advertisement. It was advertising some strongman bullshit. Arnold Schwarzenegger was actually in the ad.
Yeah.
It was like his picture holding some girl on the shoulder. And it was like, do you want to be as strong as Arnold? I'm like, I do.
Did you guys see that video of him scaring the shit out of people as a Terminator?
I did not, but
it's pretty hilarious. He basically is at the Madame Tussauds Wax Museum, and they make him up to look like the Terminator, and he goes and stands in his display. And so people will come up and take pictures, and then he'll be like, all right, let's do one now, and they'll freak out. <That's> like, he's standing there, and there was one where these people walked, they're like, man, this looks real, and he's like, it's because I am, and they're like, ah! There's another one, like, they're literally taking a picture, and they take the picture, and he's like, all right, let me take one with you guys now, and they're just like, ah! Like, they're just freaking the fuck out, like. And I'm just like, in my mind, I'm just like, man, is it that scary? And then I'm like, I guess it would be. Like,
yeah, it definitely is. You're in a fucking wax museum, everything looks realistic as fuck. And then you get to one, take a picture. Can I take one with you?
And like, he finds this Terminator on the, like, he's walking through the street and there's all these people in costumes and he walks up to this other Terminator and he's just like, who are you? And it's like, I'm the Terminator. He's like, I'm the Terminator. And he just starts reciting all his lines and everything. He goes up to one, this guy in the truck, and he's like, get out. And the guy like opens the door and he's like, just kidding. It was pretty goddamn funny, but
that's awesome.
Anyway, last bit of like little news we got. I mean, it's pretty light and we don't really want to just bullet point for you guys anymore, but
yeah.
Marvel has announced the flagship of all new, all different, all bullshit Marvel now is Invincible Iron Man by Brian Bendis and David Marquez.
You sure it's not Iron Man Armored Adventures?
Yes, I'm sure.
Because it looks like it.
It does. my real question is, why is Steel on the cover of Armor Wars?
That's what I want to know.
Yeah, but anyway, so naturally with Bendis being, this is basically the Miles Morales Ultimate Spider-Man team jumping to Iron Man. Now, don't get me wrong, David Marquez is an extremely great artist. Met him, I love his work, he's great. And naturally, with it being a Bendis book, you
it's
can
be good but slow.
Fairly, well, I mean, not even so much that, but it's gonna be a big foundation of whatever Marvel's doing. He's basically Marvel's, at this point, he's fastly becoming one of Marvel's last remaining heavy hitters, as all their guys tend to be phased out.
I guess he's like, what, they're Jeff Johns now?
Bendis has been their Jeff Johns for quite some time.
Well, like, they're only Jeff Johns.
Well, like, there was the point where they had, like, Jason Aaron, and he was writing a bunch of stuff, and
Brubaker.
They had their architects. It was Fraction, Brubaker, Hickman, Bendis, and Fraction, Brubaker, Bendis, Hickman, and somebody else.
Remender?
No, it wasn't Remender. It was before Remender. Aaron.
Aaron.
Jason Aaron, Matt Fraction, Jonathan Hickman, Brian Bendis, Ed Brubaker. Those were the architects. And
no,
then
you missed Matt Fraction.
Okay. So those guys all, like, to the point where Fraction's gone completely.
Yeah.
Hickman's got Secret Wars and then he's done. Aaron's got Thor. Remender's got Captain America. And Bendis is the only one writing more than one book for them. So they've all just kind of slowly just phased out. And then Remender jumped up, but now Remender himself is, like, down to one book, I think.
Yeah, he's got Uncanny Avengers when it comes out.
And then he's got Cap, so he's got two.
Yeah.
And so Marvel, like, Bendis is kind of their last remaining, like, institution. And in all fairness, DC was in a similar boat, and then they kind of lost everybody to the point where, like, Johns is their only remaining institution.
Yeah.
Snyder's very quickly getting there, but... So the rumor is that Bendis is leaving the X-Men booth. Well, it's true.
It's already true.
Whenever 600 comes out, that will be his swan song in the X-Men. The rumor, I think, is that Lemire is replacing him, which is pretty great.
That would be pretty cool.
Wait,
Where's that group?
Bendis on X-Men.
Oh, okay.
So like Lemire taking over the X-Men.
Fuck, man, I'd be excited as fuck.
It just annoys me that I never got Lemire writing Legion of Superheroes. But life will go on. Yeah. Bendis writing of Iron Man, naturally it's going to be a forefront. And so Marvel has basically announced that he's going to be the forefront of all new, all different, all bullshit Marvel now. A-N-A-D-A-B-M-N.
B-S.
It's a little annoying considering Iron Man's kind of been at the forefront of everything for the past couple of years.
Yeah, I literally feel he's been the main character for, like, especially since he took off in the MCU.
Oh,
the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That Fraction Iron Man series really was like the beginning of his big run.
Yeah.
So.
But even before that, I mean, he was pretty much, he was the main character of Civil War.
And he was director of S.H.I.E.L.D. and all that. You know, so he's kind of been this forefront of the Marvel Universe. And it's interesting that he's getting a new series because it basically kind of sounds like Superior is just going to kind of slowly be swept under the rug. Probably because it's not very good.
Yeah.
I love Tom Taylor on Earth 2 and Injustice, but man, he's kind of like Nick Spencer. Like, he made the jump to Marvel, and like his stuff at Marvel has just been really flat.
I wonder why that happens. Is it,
I don't
are
know.
They given? Well, I mean, I have to think it has something to do. Like, a book like Injustice and a book like Earth 2.
You're kind of given free reign. Same with like Nick Spencer and Thunder Agents. You're kind
of
given
you have
carte blanche
control
to do what you want, but then you get thrown on fucking. But then, like, you look at like. Nick Spencer went over and did Ultimate X-Men after Ultimatum, and then he did fucking where Zero got basically a clean slate, and he did fucking a War Machine book called Iron Man 2.0, and I'm like, those weren't high profile books, and I'd still like to think he had a fairly big amount of control over them, but for whatever reason, there's several writers that have come over to Marvel and for me have flattered. I think Spencer's just now getting into his rhythm with Superior Foes and Ant-Man. And hopefully Taylor finds
the thing is, I don't think it's like that. Just shows you that Spencer, he probably had, you know, you put too much control on him.
Yeah, and that happens. Yeah. That happens to a lot of people. Like every writer that I love has written something where I'm like, "Well, this was shit."
Yeah. James Robinson.
God, James Robinson. Oh my god, I love Starman, dude, but fucking Superman just burned me.
It's like one issue of a Superman run. There's the one with the dog, Crypto.
Yeah, not as good as Kurt Busiek's Crypto issue.
Oh,
but,
hell no.
The one that they randomly inserted into the middle of Straczynski's Roberson's grounded
just because,
run.
Just why not?
Because there was going to be a hero. There was going to be an issue with a Muslim hero, and they didn't want trouble.
We don't want no trouble.
Anyway, Iron Man's going to stick around.
Yeah,
it's what it is.
I just wish, you know what, with DC doing so many different things after Convergence, where you got books like Prez, you got new takes on the Black Canary, you've got Constantine the Hellblazer, which
Constantine book, you've got
feels like a Vertigo title.
You've got Bizarro, you've got Batmite, you've got all sorts of fun stuff out there.
I mean,
apparently Bizarro was really good. Like, I didn't actually read it, but like every review I saw was like, this is great.
Like, has anyone read Hellblazer?
No.
Constantine the Hellblazer?
No. Yeah.
Alright, there's a scene early on where it's like Constantine's in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Having
smoking.
A bite. Smoking. Like, he steals cigarettes from someone. He also steals the guy's wallet and uses it to buy dinner. He's flirting with the male bartender, and then a female comes in. And he leaves with the female, and like maybe a panel or a page or two later, he's having sex with her. And it's not like, you know, it's inferring sex.
Mm-hmm.
Is like she is on top, legs spread, you know, naked from the waist down, like full on, they're going at it.
Yeah.
Like, it's insane. Like, this is like a regular DC comic.
Well,
like,
it's labeled mature.
No, I don't have a problem with the mature content. I'm just saying that it's like,
it's showing
that DC's...
It's the Hellblazer that people
stuff.
Basically
yeah.
wanted as opposed to the one they potentially got.
Pretty much.
Because I know that when he made the jump back to the DCU originally, people were very critical. And then that whole kind of confusion where he was looking for Swamp Thing, but that was all bad. So DC really right now is feeling like it's all new and all different. Even the stuff that's continuing is doing different stuff. And for Marvel, it just kind of feels like it's a new coat of paint on the same old shit. At least right now, I mean, like I said, it's very early with Marvel. There's no talent.
It's far out. We don't know. We really don't know what Secret Wars and how Secret Wars are going to change things.
Yeah.
But really, like you said, it's a fresh coat of paint. It's a new set of armor for Iron Man amongst the fucking thousand armor variants that he probably has out there.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels like DC's really trying to change things up, where Marvel's just kind of like, more of the same, but we're telling you it's new. We're telling you.
Which, in all fairness, has been their standard practice for the last 5 years.
Yeah.
It's like, and all they're doing, they're taking these new characters that from other universes, merging them into this universe, and saying, so now Spider-Gwen and Miles Morales will all be on 616.
Yeah. Which, I don't have a problem with that. I mean, long as, like, if the stories are good, I really don't care.
Yeah.
But it's just like, man, just change things up a little bit, dude. Like, if they came out...
Well, in all fairness, we got fucking Sam Wilson as Cap, and we got female
Thor. Well, that's true.
Some stuff that's out
true.
There.
That's true, but I feel a lot more excited if they came out and said, Miss Marvel is the face of the all-new, all-different Marvel comics, instead of Iron Man is the face of the all-new, all-different Marvel comics.
Well,
it's like,
right? Rich white
he's
guy.
Been
oh, and by the way, it is Tony Stark. It's like, okay. Yeah. So it's the same character you've had... You know,
yeah.
some.
It's just the Bendis. It's just the Bendis written Iron Man.
Yeah,
it's what
which,
it is.
Which, admittedly, like I'm stoked for because I know a lot of people kind of shit on Bendis because he's very decompressed. You know, and all his characters.
Bendis is another writer to me that I'm like, he's written stuff that I absolutely love, and then he's written stuff that I think is shit.
Well, yeah, like I wouldn't go as far to say that I absolutely hate stuff he's written, but he's definitely got some very mediocre stuff.
What is it that I hate? I hate Age of Ultron. Age of Ultron is bad.
Yeah, I don't.
Don't make excuses. Age of Ultron is bad.
I wouldn't say hate. I'm just saying it's bad.
It's a bad comic.
It starts off with
hate. Maybe strong. Hate maybe a strong word, but I absolutely loathe that comic. loathe. We'll go with loathe, not hate, because those aren't the same. So yeah, it's a little disconcerting, but you know, like I said, it's still early days. Maybe they'll throw out something. I can't. It's tough for me to get excited about Bendis Iron Man because, like you said, it just kind of feels like it's the same. So, we'll see.
I'd be more excited, like, even though he's been writing Ultimate Spider-Man for the past fucking 15 years, if they said, Peter Parker, 616, classic Spider-Man, now written by Bendis, I'd be more excited for that than I am Bendis on Iron Man.
Because Bendis has written Iron Man before, a lot, in Avengers. And Avengers in general. So, with him writing Peter, he didn't write Peter a lot in Avengers, so... So that would be something I'd be interested in.
Yeah.
And it's... For this, I'm just like, I've seen your Iron Man. I'm impressed.
Plus, you know, it'll give our buddy Dan Slott a break.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Our buddy.
Our buddy.
All right. So, picks of the week.
All right. Yeah. So, we actually were recording this on Thursday.
So we've actually been able to read most of these things.
Yeah.
Well, some of us have.
Some of us have. But our collective pick of the week is going to be Archie vs. Predator number 3.
Yes.
Which is by Alex DeCampi, and Alex DeCampi's writing.
Yeah.
And I forget who draws it.
Give me a second. I'll break
But I actually read this. I don't think you guys did.
I did.
You
I
did.
It.
Okay.
Yeah, I
So there's going to be some mild spoilers here.
Honestly, I really don't think you can spoil.
Just tell me if it was good or not.
It was good.
Fucking man, we're gonna talk about the fucking book. God damn.
You
keep telling me that I can't talk about these books. Like fucking Annihilator, man. You still won't let me talk about Annihilator.
Fernando Ruiz.
Rich Kowalski on Inks, I think.
Yeah,
that's
it.
Yeah, I was getting those guys backwards. But it further kind of cements that, one, that absolutely nobody in this book is safe. Like, that's been almost the recurring theme of this book, is it's gone Walking
it's
Dead.
It's kind of killing whoever, yeah.
Yeah, it's gone Walking Dead in that nobody in this book is safe.
And what I absolutely love, I mean, I know it, we've talked about this before, but I just love how brutally violent this book is.
It's brutally violent, but drawn in the Archie style.
It's drawn very cartoony. But it's like they have no problem with showing the Predator separating someone's
like just
spine.
Pulling someone's skull with their spine out.
Yeah.
In that Archie style. That's still the funniest part to me.
But then, like, what I love about it is, like, they're all making jokes about it. Like, there's one joke where they're talking about, they're like, you know, oh, guys, I got bad news. The Riverdale police force can't help us. They're all dead. And someone was like, all two cars are gone? Like, it's like all four cops are dead? Oh, shit.
Well, it's funny because it's kind of... It seems like an offhand joke, but then it kind of makes fun of the fact that Riverdale is not a place equipped to handle something like this.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Just the way it's... It, that's the kind of town Riverdale is. It does have two cop cars.
Issue two was they took three or four high school students, gave them military outfits and guns, and said, go fight this thing.
Yeah, exactly.
That's literally what happened, because there was someone there that happened to be a general.
And knew what a predator was.
Yeah.
And then this issue is mostly them on the run, and then you get to the end, which...
What's the name of the kid? The AV Club kid?
Oh, God. I don't remember.
But anyway, I love the fact that he's literally pointing out that it's like, look, man, Archie, like, one, you're not going to die because you're the hero, and two, you always get the girl. And it's like, in the midst of, like, everyone, like, you know, a major character dies, I'm not going to say who, but he consoles... Betty by like hugging her and kissing her,
and then turns right to Veronica.
Veronica's like, what about me? And he's like, oh, my bad, and kisses and hugs her, and then like the next panel he's hugging both of them at the same time,
and this AV kid is just like, what the fuck?
Yeah, he's like, yeah, I'm telling you, man, like, it's not, nothing's gonna happen to you, but all the bad stuff's gonna happen to me.
He's like and so he this is kind of a spoiler, but It's very Archie in what it does, in that he literally has a giant mecha Archie suit that he's going to fight the Predator.
He's just like, all right, I'm going to get in this thing.
And then I'm going to be Archie, and you're all going to like
Archie,
me.
Archie, I'm the hero.
Exactly.
I'm going to survive.
It's so Archie, but then it's still, like you said, so brutally violent at the
violent,
same time.
But it's silly. It's a really fun book. I mean,
absolutely.
It's not like, it's not the best
thing. It's not Afterlife quality, but it's pretty good. Then again, what is Afterlife, really?
Afterlife and Sabrina are, like, two of the books. I was actually thinking about it. Like, what books could be delayed indefinitely, and I wouldn't care? And it's like, those are those books.
Because they have been, and I still buy them.
Exactly.
But,
Alright, has Sabrina 2 come out? Did I miss
Sabrina that? 3's out.
Fuck. Okay, cool. Right, well, I guess I got some stuff to go
buy. Yeah. And Afterlife 8's out, although I still don't have my poster from Frank Gavilla yet.
You'll get it.
I ordered that Here's Juggy print he put out, and I still don't have it yet.
When did you order that?
Like a month ago.
Well, that's not too bad.
I think he still has to print them and everything, so yeah.
Just buy them in good faith.
Yeah, whatever. I'll get it eventually. If I don't have it by MondoCon, I'll just be like, what the fuck?
He'll be like, I'm sorry, Seth Rogen.
Yeah, he'll be like, you were great in the Steve Jobs movie. So yeah, Archie vs. Predator is our collective pick of the week. Vince and I both read it. We both quite enjoyed it.
Sure, Dusty will enjoy it when he reads it. Yeah.
We shall. Alright. Dusty, since you didn't read your books, why don't you go first?
Okay. I've got Southern Bastards number 9.
No, you don't.
It says it.
No, that's me.
Well.
Your first one is Bloodshot Reborn number 3.
So I've got Bloodshot Reborn number 3 as well. I've actually been really enjoying this series.
I've read the first two. I actually picked up issue 3, but it was the
one
book.
Did you read The Valiant?
No, I did not read The Valiant.
Okay, read The Valiant, because that sets it all up.
Well, it explains it all in issue 1.
Yeah, true. It's cool to watch
and
all that.
Yeah. So, it's been good, and I know that Lemire's sticking with it, so it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got...
Let's see. Dark Horse Presents number 11, so simply because Fabian has a black past.
Yes, Fabian's the next big story.
Yeah.
So he actually
really
said that
this.
He kind of said the revelation for this story came after Comicpalooza last year.
Yeah. I like to think we have a small part.
He stayed at my place, so where's my 10%?
Exactly.
That's for him.
Let's see. I've also got Empty Zone number 1.
What's this?
It's known from Jason Sean Alexander.
Who's that?
Very badass artist.
What has he done before?
What has he done for me lately?
You know, I would have a hard time telling you that. But I know I really like his stuff.
Okay.
I'm worried like that sometimes. Let's see, I've also got Low number 7. This is a new story arc coming from
Bender and
Tochini. Then Moon Knight number 16. I believe this is coming to a wrap with Cullen Bunn.
I wouldn't know. I saw it.
No, it's been fucking great.
Oh,
so.
Okay.
And then Valhalla Mad number 2, which is a new one from Joe Casey and our buddy Paul Mayberry.
So, cool.
Yeah.
Alright, excellent stuff. Bloodshot Reborn, I definitely am enjoying. Like, I'd never really read Valiant hardcore, and then I just jumped into Bloodshot Reborn, and I picked it up and I went. It's been fine.
There's a couple titles I want to go back. Like, I've heard really good things about Archer and Armstrong.
The comics.
There's Quantum Leap. Like, Ninjak. you know.
Yeah, Ninjak is really good too. I'm going to say that to every Valiant comic that's your name. So, read all of it. That's my biggest...
Valiant needs an on-demand service so that I can just read all of it.
Yeah.
But, so Vince, what do you got?
I have... Shit, what do I have? Okay.
Wait, hold on 1 second.
Nice.
I'll cut that out in post. Actually, I probably won't, but...
Steve, that, man. Fuck it. Okay. So, prize number one... by DC Comics. Had we recorded on Tuesday, this wouldn't be on my list. But I heard good things, and I decided to pick it up, and I read it. And it's pretty good. I mean, there are a lot of outlets out there that are fucking praising the shit out of this book. IGN in particular. And it's good. I don't think it's as good as they say it is. But it's got... it's pretty interesting. It takes place... 20 or so years in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically presidential elections are coming up. And it's kind of funny because they poke fun at the beginning where they're like, okay, well, we can't use this guy as a candidate. He's got too many selfies. And then it shows like an old selfie of him. He's like smoking weed or something. And it's like, oh, well, what about this guy? And he's like, yeah, that's selfies. So it's like, it's kind of riffing on like Facebook culture now.
Yeah.
Where it's like, what's going to happen in 20, 30 years?
When we're running everything.
Yeah, when guys our age are trying to run for president and stuff. And
well, it's like you'll go look at Tom Hardy's MySpace.
Oh, that shit's hilarious. That stuff is hilarious. like sexy photos of fucking Tom Hardy.
It's kind
of
like my fear that like I'm ever famous, somebody will track down like my old Facebooks or Zangas where I'm depressing and emo as shit.
Christ, yeah, don't ever try and find my MySpace. That's all I can say.
Oh, well, now I have to find it.
Anyway, continuing on.
But anyway, and I guess it's like, you know, it's ridiculous. It's a complete, like, lampoon of kind of, like, today's media, today's political system, how, like, the media controls politics, and how it's like obviously like things like Twitter, things like Facebook are going to keep getting bigger. Not necessarily Facebook and Twitter, but things like them. Mm-hmm. You know, YouTube channels. So it's like you're not going to have celebrities in like the TV show sense. Like they make a joke where someone's like, why do I have to go? A presidential candidate's like, why do I have to go on this guy's YouTube channel? Can I just buy TV ad space? And they're like, well, what do you want to buy TV ad, like ad space on? The Honeymooners or Isle of Lucy? Because no one's watching TV anymore. Everything's on YouTube. Everything's streaming. Everything's digital. So TV is the past. You know. So now you've got to get with this kid that's smacking your ass with a puppy holding a fucking paddle or whatever. Because that's what's going to...
That's what's going to get you.
what happens is that Prez, the girl they... It seems like they're going to vote into office. She becomes popular because she's filming a training video for like the burger joint she works at. Mm-hmm. How to clean the fucking grill. You know? And she leans in and she's like, well, the key to cleaning the grill is scrubbing really hard. And then she starts, you hear like a crackle and she starts to smell something. Turns out her hair's in the fryer. And someone puts that on YouTube. And it's trending. And now there's an anti-government movement called... it's a riff on... what are the guys with the Guy Fawkes masks?
Anonymous.
I actually think it is Anonymous, now that I think about it. But they, like all of them started writing in her as a vote. Because what they've changed is that in order to draw, like, to increase voter turnout, you can now vote on Twitter. So they're hacking Twitter to get her up there, so now she's in the running for president.
Like, gee, I wonder how it's going to turn out.
Yeah, I wonder how it's going to turn out. So, I mean, it's really interesting. It's really funny.
I'm going to have to borrow that from you.
Yeah, I was actually thinking about bringing it, because it's a pretty neat book. It's a surprise. And like I said earlier, it just shows how different DC is right now.
Yeah.
It's like they're really diversifying because there's, in all honesty, this book really has nothing to do with superheroes. Nothing. Like, it could literally take place in a world that doesn't have Superman, Batman, whoever.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it is what it is. Yeah. And it's interesting.
That's how the original Prez book was, I think.
Yeah.
Done.
So, I'm excited to see how it continues. Hopefully it maintains this level of, you know, it's as good as it is. I also have,
Thor's.
Thor's number one.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really cool. It's basically, like, if you've been reading Secret Wars, you know that the Thors are like the cops of the Battle World. So it's basically like every cop, you know, buddy cop.
My friend described this book in the way that I like. He said, so Thor's number one came out, and my only good comparison is an 80s buddy cop movie with Thor as both partners and the chief and all the other cops and the forensics.
No. That's actually what it is. Like, Throg, the Thor Frog,
mm-hmm.
he's the forensic scientist.
That's
Odin
the
is,
shit.
Odin is like the old grumpy Thor chief that's had too much of this shit. You know,
let's get too old for this.
Ultimate Thor and Beta Ray, he's Beta Ray Bill, but they call him Beta Ray Thor.
Okay.
He's the, like, these guys are the what would you call it? Like, the veteran cops.
Yeah.
You know, they're the vanguard, they're the guys everyone looks up to.
Yeah.
You've got, like, the rookie Thors, and it's, like, literally, like, I'm 3 weeks out of the academy. Like, but I'm looking up to you.
Oh, it's 2 weeks to retirement.
I heard you took down 13 Hulks, and then, like, they're joking about it. It's like, last time I heard the story, you took down 10 Hulks. And he's like, man, I actually took down 5 Hulks. And he's like, they're joking on, like, how that kind of stuff happens. Storm is, like, the plucky, she's the Stormbringer, I think, but she's, like, Storm Thor or whatever. And she's, like, the minority, like, female minority. Like, she's female, she's black. She's a mutant, and she's Thor, so she fits, like, all those minorities. And then you've got, like, Rune Thor, who he's, like, the fucking old racist drunk Thor, where he's, like, he shows up to work drunk, and he's fucking making fun of the muties and all this stuff. It's really cool. It's a really cool book.
They started making a bunch of jokes, so they were like, I really appreciated how Thor was portrayed in the book, but I really don't think Thor got enough page time.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried the future issues might not focus on Thor as much, but I really hope Thor comes back for more. I really hope there's a spinoff featuring Thor and Thor and exploring their whole relationship away from the other Thors.
I to be honest, Secret Wars, like, I was really excited about Thor's before Secret Wars. And then as Secret Wars happened, like, I kind of got less excited because the way they're handled in the book proper...
They're super serious, aren't they?
They're, like, super serious, and they just kind of show up, and they're definitely, like, in the hand of Doom.
Yeah.
You know? So, like, Doom's controlling them. They're Doom's guys. Right? So they're more, like, stormtroopers than cops.
But Thor's book, just kind of...
Yeah, Thor's changes
it.
That, and it's, like,
yeah,
like, literally...
Yeah, I should have asked for this copy from
you. I can get it to you next
time.
Week, yeah. It's literally, like... Fuck, it's like Lethal Weapon with Thor's.
That's amazing.
With Thor. It's really cool.
Like Lethal Weapon, except everyone is Thor.
Yeah, except everyone is Thor.
Joe Pesci, he's Thor.
He's Thor.
Chris Rock, he's Thor.
And then my last book is Old Man Logan, number 2.
I'm also excited for this one.
It's good. Like,
yeah.
Man,
IGN fucking hated it.
Dude, it's...
They gave it like a 5.
I can see why, because it's very decompressed. And it's very kind of like... I got to the end of the comic and I was like, fuck, that's it? But it ends on like a really big, like, oh, crap.
Yeah.
Like, it's basically...
I don't know if you know this, but that's how decompressed storytelling works.
you decompress
it for 18 pages and then bam, punch me in the face on the last one.
Anyway. The art's really good. The story's cool. I think it's going in an interesting direction. Because basically, like, as you're reading... As I've been reading the Battleworld books... You get the sense that not everyone, like, no one knows what's going on in the other battle worlds.
Yeah.
It's like, so Old Man Logan lives in his own world, and when he gets over the fence, he's like, the fuck is this? You know, like, where am I? Who are these people?
Yeah.
And then they're looking at him and they're saying, Who the fuck are you? Where the hell did you come from? And then actually a Thor shows up, and it's just kind of like, what are you doing here? Snap. Like, you know, takes care of Wolverine and he falls, and then, like, Sabretooth shows up and a bunch of other characters show up. So it's really interesting. And, like I said, it's very decompressed, though. So it's kind of like, fuck, there's not a lot going on here.
Respect that from
Yeah, you kind of expect that.
Yeah.
But the art, fucking fantastic.
Yeah.
Dude. I cannot...
Sorrentino's got amazing.
Yeah, I can't fucking rave more about Sorrentino. His art's phenomenal. And that's it. That's me.
All right, I got 4 books this week. The first one is kind of... DC was hyping this book up majorly. It's JLA number 1 by Brian Hitch.
And I also read this book.
It's got Hitch writing and drawing, and then I think it's got 3 inkers. I think it's Andrew Curry, who's a classic inker of his, Wade Von Grobinger, who does Stuart Immonen mostly, and then Brian Hitch himself inks the rest of it.
Von Grobinger?
Bond Graw Badger.
Graw Badger.
Graw Badger.
Graw Badger.
So yeah, this is kind of, DC kind of just been hyping this up as basically just Brian Hitch unleashed on Justice League, basically.
Is it on a wide,
it's not all widescreen, but like you...
There's a lot of widescreen action, but it's not like, it's not everything isn't widescreen action.
Like, it definitely plays to that, because, I mean, even in some of the ads for it, it was, like epic widescreen Hitch or whatever. So, yeah, it's in there, but it's definitely not the only thing.
I'm actually wondering, because remember they, or when they were talking about Twixcale, the ads, the double-page ads, they were saying, it's like, well, we tell them, you know, like, okay, we're going to put an ad here, we're going to put an ad here. So split the page up appropriately.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, I don't think Hitch got that memo if he's been working on this book for fucking years.
Well, the way you can do it is that, like, if he's got just a page, you can split page, in the middle. Yeah, you just find one that's got four pages down, split it.
Split the page.
But it was, I was a little leery. I kind of picked it up on a whim. I was not originally planning.
I basically picked it up because you picked it up.
I wasn't planning on getting it. I wasn't, because I wasn't impressed hugely. I haven't been impressed with a lot of his more recent stuff. Because he did Captain America Reborn. And then he kind of transitioned out of Marvel. I think he did the beginning of Age of Ultron. And then he did a book with Jonathan Ross, who's kind of a David Letterman-esque character in Britain. He's a late-night host.
Yeah.
They did a book called America's Got Powers, which was basically a superhero reality show story. I think I actually had all the issues. I don't know if I ever read them. Oh, I don't think I did, because I can't remember shit about it. And then he did an Image book called Real Heroes that was just basically Galaxy Quest of superheroes. And I wasn't hugely... The thing that worried me is that Real Heroes was the first book he wrote and drew himself, and I wasn't a fan of it. I didn't think he... It was an interesting enough concept, but I don't think he did as much with as he could have.
Yeah.
And so with this, I was a little skeptical of, you know, like, what is he going to do? What has he got? What's his plans? What is he... And so I picked it up on a whim, and it does have a very hefty price tag. It's $6, but you're getting almost 50 pages of story for that, which means it's basically two books... You're getting two issues worth of content for the cost of two issues, basically. You're paying $6...
Two for the price of two.
Exactly. A little more than two for the price of two. Because books are, what, 22 pages now? So you get a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, like, honestly, it's like, yeah, that's... I was looking at the book, and I was like, man, $6.
But yeah, then I was reading it while I was cooking dinner, and I'm like, this thing just keeps going on. Like, it just keeps going. It's fucking Energizer Bunny. That's an outdated reference. Shit. But no, so I read it, and so I picked it up kind of on a whim, and I read it, and I was just like, this wasn't bad. I was actually kind of surprised. It basically features, it's continuity light. I mean, we have no idea when this quote-unquote story takes place, but...
It doesn't really matter. It
really doesn't. And it introduces enough interesting concepts that I'm more than willing to check out the next issue. Basically, we're introduced to a couple of different plot threads. We're kind of introduced to this whole... The Infinity Corporation, is that what they're called? I think so.
Yes.
And they're kind of doing this experiment where, like, some doomsday-level disaster is coming, and they keep trying to pull Superman out of these timelines, but every time they do, he's already dead. And so they've got this literally, like, you get the shot, and it's just a stockpile of dead Superman bodies. And so they invite the actual Superman over to try to tell him what's going to happen. And naturally, it's a little heavy-handed with some of the stuff, some of the dialogue in that scene, but you basically can figure out that these guys aren't telling the complete truth. There's more that they know, but Superman has to leave because the Justice League is fighting Parasite and getting their asses whooped.
Yeah.
And they basically find out that the Justice League is fighting Parasite because somebody set them up, and it kind of turns out later that it was the Infinity Corporation that set them up. And then there's some stuff going on with Aquaman. You know, he's dealing with a little bit of a political issue with Atlantis being a sovereign nation where other nations are a little afraid that Atlantis could just take it over whenever they want.
Yeah.
And so some interesting stuff to play. Aquaman is the only main member of the Justice League who doesn't interact with the rest of them. Basically,
they get the memo.
Well, I mean, he's in it, but he's not with the rest of the team. So, and then
I do like, there's one part that really stuck out where he was like, they were basically like, well, you're helping the Justice League, or is it the Justice League of America? And he's like, look, I'm helping the JLA, I'm helping these people because it's the thing to do. Not because I'm allied to any particular country or any particular people. It's like, something that attacks Earth attacks everyone. yeah. You know, including Atlantis. So I thought that was a pretty cool moment.
Yeah, it is, and it kind of just, and it's an interesting side to Aquaman that doesn't really get explored, especially in the current Aquaman series, where he's kind of just really getting his feet back into Atlantis. So it doesn't bother me, and I quite enjoyed it. And like I said, I was actually pretty surprised at how much I was like, wow, this is actually fairly compelling.
It's a solid book.
I was pretty impressed. And I imagine he's probably gotten some help on the writing side. I mean, I'm sure he's sent some people and had them look at it. But it was pretty good. And, you know, big. I mean, you can tell a couple of pages were done by different inkers, but mostly the art style holds together, and you get plenty of your big, bold superhero action drawn by Brian Hitch on his first DC work and first long form DC work, and man, a long fucking time. I know he did a bit in Detective 27 with Meltzer. I think him and Meltzer retold the original Batman story, like the debut Batman story. Mm-hmm. But outside that, he hadn't done interior work for DC since I think like some JLA stuff with Mark Waid. Like he did an arc of JLA with Mark Waid, and then did a graphic novel of JLA with Mark Waid, and like that was it, I think, for him at DC. So he's been at Marvel for the last almost 15 years. Yeah. So seeing him back on DC in a big way is pretty cool. And I know DC has apparently been courting him for stuff for a while now, and I think the lackluster success of Real Heroes finally pushed him towards.
Well, I can see why. Justice League. Not as a lackluster success, but I mean Hitch at his game, like when his game is on.
He's awesome.
He's awesome, yeah.
I mean, he invented kind of the real first sense of widescreen storytelling in comics on The Authority, and then transitioned it over to The Ultimates. And
The Ultimates is fucking great. I love
it. It looks beautiful, even if the story falls apart in number two.
Yeah. To be honest, it's one of those books where I'm almost afraid to go back and read, because I'm not sure how...
I honestly feel that way about it, too. I feel like if I went back and read Ultimates, I'd hate it.
Like, I'm not sure how well it holds up.
I don't think it does. I think it's very much a product of, like, a 9/11 world.
Yeah.
And just really plays to that. And I think right now it would feel... Like, I already felt Ultimates 2 was super dated. But I think if I read back and read Ultimates 1... I think if I went back and read Ultimates 1, I would just be like, so everyone's an asshole. That's pretty much the team.
Yeah, I came into the Ultimates scene very, very late. And, yeah, that's basically what I got from it. It was just like, I don't really care for the shit.
Like, I read... I don't remember how I got into... No, one of my friends got me into Ultimates in, like, 2005. So I think by that point...
Ultimates 2 was over.
No. I was reading Ultimates 2 as it came out. Like, I think most of Ultimates 2, probably half of it, had been finished. And then I finished it.
Ultimates 2 was done by the time I went to college. And that was fall 2005. Because Ultimates 1 started in 2001.
Okay, well, anyway, I can guarantee that I remember waiting for a couple of the issues. Because there was specifically an Ultimates 2 cover with Thor. And he's, like, in the rain. And he looked badass. And I don't know. Anyway, I don't remember what issue number it was. Might have been 11, might have been 7. Anyway, where was I going with this?
Something about how cool it was. Dated.
It was cool. Okay, I completely lost.
All right, whatever. but no, like, I do feel that, like, if I went back and read it, I'd hate it. I think that I would just feel that it's super dated.
Yeah, it's like it's one of those things I wanted to, but I'm like, man, I don't know.
But anyway, so JLA, not bad for a debut. And I'm definitely interested enough to keep going and see where it's going to lead us.
And like we said, don't let the price tag fool you.
You're getting two full issues of content. Like I said, even a little bit more so. And that was the thing I noticed. Like, it was a thick book, and then like started reading it, and like it just kept going.
I honestly thought, like, I expected that there to be like a couple double page spreads or something as to its size, but I was like, nope, it's just...
It's really not. It's just a long fucking book. Cool. And so after that, I've got Southern Bastards 9, the one Dusty tried to steal from me. This is the start of our next arc. This is the start of the next arc on the book. You've got the first arc, and then the second. What's the first arc? Here Was a Man, and then arc 2 is Gridiron?
Yes.
So this starts the third arc. Did you read 8?
Yes.
The end of 8, where What's-His-Face is dead?
Shit, maybe not.
God damn it.
I want to say yes.
Like Coach Big gets into his story, how he trains Ulysses and everything?
Yeah.
And then at the end of the book, at the end of the issue, they...
Is it him, like, the pizza, or like...
Fucking... The end of issue 80 shot himself. I'm sorry if that's a spoiler. That book's been out for like 5 months. the end of issue 8, Coach Big has shot himself.
Yes.
Okay, all right. Yes. This picks up from that and gets into the story of everything. And, like, it introduces us to yet another character in this hodgepodge of a town. This time it's the sheriff. And gets into his story and about how he was a star at the school football team, but yet magically never went on to anything. And the book gets into why. And it's fucked up.
Speaking of Southern Bastards, it has just been optioned by FX.
No shit.
Yeah, very cool.
They can adapt all 8 issues into the first half of the first season. Like, I love this book, but, like, not much fucking happens between. Yeah. Like, the overall combined time of, like, issues 1 to 8 is, like, a week. And so, but no, it's a great, great book, and this book really even further just delves into how fucked up Euless Boss is. And, like I said, we get the insight into Coach Big, we get the insight into the sheriff. Not much with Tubbs' kid. We don't see her in this issue.
Gotcha.
And they also are going to be putting out a hardcover of the first 8 issues.
Nice.
They're doing the 2-trade hardcovers. And I will probably be buying it because this is a book that I would not mind having nice hardcovers for some good presentation. So definitely check it out. Next up is Gail Simone's Secret 6 number 3. This is the long, long awaited 3rd issue of Gail Simone's Secret 6. Issues 1 and 2 came out with artist Ken Lashley, man, like late last year, early this year, and ran into endless delays, and then apparently so bad that, like, Lashley left the book to go to something else. But Dale Eaglesham from the original Villains United has jumped back in, and he's going to be doing the arcs from now on. And actually, the book is a lot easier to understand with him drawing it, because with Lashley drawing it, he was going a little too scratchy, and I couldn't really follow it very. Especially when they were, like, in the first couple issues, they're down in that box.
Yeah.
Like, the way he drew it, it was just all fucking dark. I couldn't tell the characters apart. Yeah. It was just.
The art was rough.
The art, I think, is why those. Yeah, it's like there was a really great story hidden under there, but the art was just really hard to follow. And Eaglesham is like a complete polar opposite. Like, he's polished, he's clear. It's a very different feel of the book. But anyway, at the end of issue 2, they basically break out of this coffin they're in, and they basically go on the run from this Mockingbird organization that was trying to get them to answer this question. And so, this issue has them basically hiding out in a neighborhood. It starts delving into a lot more of the characters, because we've got a different team in front of us now. We've got Catman, and we've got Black Alice, but we've got, what's the guy's, like, Big Guy, I think his name is? Like, it's literally just Big Guy. The big guy that kind of expands. And then you've got a former Talon in there. Snix, I think her name is. And then you've got Porcelain, a character. She turns everything super brittle so that people can break it. And then you've got the new Ventriloquist. And you've got her dummy. And so it's a very different team. It's got 2 of the 6 members from previous teams. But we start delving into those characters. And then we get a big reveal. We find out who Mockingbird is. And we find out that Big Guy may not be all we thought he was. And in fact, maybe a character that people have wanted back for a long time.
Cool.
I won't say who, for the sake of spoilers. All right. But, yeah.
Do I have to, like, I mean, I know it's been, like, what, 6 months since the last
time? Yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while. Does it do anything to catch me up, or do I have to, like, fucking Wikipedia something?
It kind of does. Like, it really just kind of goes over the broad strokes of where on the, you remember, like, it, you know, flashes back to them, like, you remember that, how they wanted us to kill each other, right? And yeah. Stuff like that. So, I'd say if you hadn't read issues 1 and 2, you could still safely jump in. I just went to the back issue bins and saw that they had 1 and 2, so I just bought them. And,
I'm honestly not even sure if I still have 1 or 2. That's why.
I would say you could buy 3, even with your kind of passing knowledge of what happened in 1 and 2. I mean, basically, all you really need to understand from 1 and 2 is that this organization kidnaps Catman, and then they lock him in a box at the bottom of the ocean with these 5 other people, and at the end of that issue, they break out, and the organization says it's going to hunt them down.
Yeah.
So issue 3 is them on the run, and at the end of the issue, we get some big reveals, and I guess if you pay attention, who Mockingbird is isn't a surprise, but...
Is it Lex Luthor?
No.
Damn it. What? That's who it is in the fucking other one.
Draw from my posters behind you, man. And then my last book this week is Ghostbusters Get Real number 1. What are you guys looking at? Oh, that's my certificate of authenticity from my Iron Man poster. That it's an official Marvel licensed product. That's all the gray matter stuff now. But anyway, the last book I have this week is Ghostbusters Get Real number 1. This is the long-awaited crossover between the movie Ghostbusters and the cartoon Ghostbusters.
Nice.
It's probably going to kind of be the cap to IDW's Ghostbuster stuff. Basically, they had their two ongoing series, and then they had the follow-up TMNT Ghostbusters series.
Yeah.
And so now we're doing the TMNT, or the Ghostbusters Real Ghostbusters series. And it's pretty great. Like, it finds a reason as to why the real Ghostbusters inexplicably end up in the movie Ghostbusters world, and just kind of has them trying to figure out what's going on. And it's got this villain that's been introduced that's kind of seeding along, and he has this big fixation on getting rid of the Ghostbusters. So if you're a Ghostbusters fan, and it's interesting because the movie Ghostbusters are drawn in the exact same style they were from the previous series, like all the way through, but the real Ghostbusters are drawn exactly like they are from the cartoon. Like, they are drawn like to a T exactly how they looked. So it's not like they're going with exaggerated versions of them. The artist is literally drawing them exactly like they
look. So it's like what's it called? Turtle Power?
Turtles Forever.
Turtles Forever.
Where everybody looked exactly like they did on their show. Yeah. Except it's a comic. And it's pretty fun. I mean, if you're a Ghostbuster fan and you like what IDW has been doing, I mean, this is definitely something you should check out. And even if you haven't, if you're just a fan of either show, either the movies or the cartoon, I think you'll have a lot of fun reading this.
I was about to ask whether it'd be something good for someone that hasn't picked up a Ghostbusters comic.
I hadn't read TMNT Ghostbusters, and I didn't read the last of the Ghostbusters series before. They're doing a hardcover of it. I'm going to pick that up. And I was able to jump into this just fine. I mean, it starts off with the real Ghostbusters, who have never had a series before. So it goes on with them, and this villain shows up, and then he dumps them into this world. And it makes a couple of passing references to TMNT Ghostbusters, but nothing that's hard to understand. So it's pretty fun. And if you're a Ghostbuster fan, it's good. And if you're a Ghostbuster fan, you should buy it, because if the sales are good, then they'll do more Ghostbuster stuff.
And that's what's important.
Well, because that was kind of why the series got canceled. The guys kind of admitted. They were just like, yeah, it wasn't doing well enough to warrant its existence. So they kind of were forced to pack it in. And so, yeah, that's my last pick of the week.
Speaking of packing it in,
we're going to wrap this up. So that's us for this week. Anything big coming up soon that we guys are dealing with?
I don't think so. Just same shit, different day, basically.
Basically, I don't think I've got anything cool coming up.
Heroes Con this weekend.
It is.
I'm not going, so.
Jesse is, though.
Yeah.
Cool.
What else is coming up? Space City Con's coming up. It's actually putting together a pretty impressive list.
He is.
I'm actually getting a little surprised.
Yeah.
No, it's funny, because I just finished watching Orange is the New Black Season 3.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, they announced that Kate Mulgrew was going to be there, but they're hyping up the Star Trek Voyager stuff, because it's, like, the 20th anniversary of Star Trek Voyager. And so, like, I was like, ah, that's cool, because I remember watching Star Trek Voyager back in the day, and then we started watching Orange is the New Black, and I was like, wait a second, Kate Mulgrew's Red from Orange is the New Black. Yeah. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, now I kind of actually want to go meet her, because I like this damn show so much. And she read the audiobook of Joe Hill's latest novel.
Nice.
So, like, Kate Mulgrew just keeps coming back into my brain. So I think I'm going to have to meet her, but a lot of great artists are going to be there. Like, Ken Lashley, I think, is going to be there. Scott Collins is going to be there.
Absolutely. Just bash his art.
Sorry, man. I mean, just, no, like, I've seen stuff he's drawn before that's been fine, but, like, the style he chose on those first few books
was very scratchy and
very muddy.
Well,
it was the colors, I think, that might have actually been the problem.
Yeah.
Okay. Dusty's got to roll out because he's got better things to do.
I have
people waiting on me. Ah, I see how it is. Man, the night we're recording, you got people waiting on you. Fine.
That's what took me so long to get here.
Jesus Christ. We're going to have to fire you and bring in Charles Schultz.
Do it.
All right, guys. We'll see you next week.
Have a good week, folks.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, go buy your dad something nice. It's Father's Day this weekend.
Yeah, seriously.
Seriously. He's why you're here. Come on.
Literally. Like, literally.